I kind of see that all different careers are more and more requiring this type of multidisciplinary collaboration and facilitation skills, yep. and rather than deep expertise in one kind of single area.
Aalto University Podcast.
This is Leading for Interdisciplinary Creativity, and I am your host, Irina Viippola. In this episode, we talk about design thinking and service design, and are they still relevant concepts in today's world? Service design was a hot topic some 10 years ago, but now it seems to have been forgotten and run over by terms like user experience, emotional design, and transformation design. Let's find out from two accomplished design experts what they think. Welcome, Adi Varadarajan and Laura Lerkkanen. I'm happy to have you here.
Glad to be here.
Thank you.
To start with, I would like to ask you that who you are. So can you tell a bit about yourself? Do you want to start, Laura?
Yes, sure. Thank you, Irina, for having me here. It's a pleasure to be back to IDBM and talk about my experiences today. So my name is Laura Lerkkanen, and I work as a AI transformation lead in innovation transformation consultancy Hellon. My roots come from the creative field, so I originally graduated as an industrial designer and kind of established my career as a service designer alongside of the studies here in Aalto in IDBM, and through different twists and turns. Nowadays, I'm leading the transformation initiatives within Hellon and within our client organizations here in Finland and also globally. So happy to talk about my journey and experiences, and as you said, what is the role of service design in nowadays field?
Okay, Adi.
All right. I'm also really glad to be here. So thanks for inviting me. My name is Aditya, but everyone knows me as Adi. And I have quite a complex background. I'm currently a lead designer at Finnair and leading the service delivery part of it. So quite a lot of service design related things do happen on an ongoing basis, at least with my job. My background is a bit all over the place. I started off, I like to say, as an accidental engineer, and from that made the switch into physical product design and industrial design. Mm-hmm. And I think about 12 years ago, I made the switch from that to the digital side. So I was doing UX and strategic design and service design at that point for like various consulting companies. And then maybe about 8 years ago, I moved here to Finland, to Aalto, and to do the IDBM and get my teeth into the business side of things and understand the whole transdisciplinary nature of things. And yeah, since then I have done a variety of things. I worked in the social impact space as a consultant for a while. I have been running like a startup on the side, and now Finnair for the last 3.5 years. So lots to say about both design thinking and service design. So looking forward to this conversation.
Yes, really nice. So then we have the right guests here to speak about this topic. And you both have a really kind of varied career paths. So you have been working with many, many different topics along the way. To start with, as a question, I would like to ask that now thinking back, what has been the role of the IDBM program in your professional development? Maybe Adi, you can start with this.
Sure. So since my background was both from the tech side and the design side, I had a good sense in both those areas, but the business side was always sort of missing, I would say. And while I was working with different startups, with different companies, and I understood like functionally like how e-commerce should work and how platforms work, it was coming to IDBM that really gave me like a proper sort of grounding in the business side of things and in the entrepreneurial side of things, because I got to do quite a few sort of courses from the Aalto Ventures program, which I don't think is existing anymore. It's got a new name. And so doing those courses, doing sort of the business track courses, that really helped sort of expand my knowledge and made me more sort of multidisciplinary as a practitioner. And that has also helped me be better equipped to sort of have that business vocabulary to talk business with both clients when I was in consulting and also stakeholders within such a large organization like Finnair.
Mm. It's interesting how important language is in this work.
Absolutely.
In this field of work. You kind of need to know the all the different, even the jargon of a certain area in order to get your ideas through.
Yep.
What about you, Laura? How do you see the, what is the role of IDBM in your professional development?
Actually, likewise, as Adi said, but from the different angle. So as I am coming from the creative industry and with the design background, I think it was hugely beneficial to study operations development, like operational excellence in the technical school, as well as studies in the business school, in order to be able to speak the language of the company and kind of understand the core KPIs and metrics and kind of fundamentals, how organizations work. So I definitely think that the IDBM Master's program kind of provided those tools and viewpoints that I kind of later came across within my career quite many times. And even kind of the industry project, I'd say that majority of my work nowadays is like a continuous industry project. So similar initiatives. So multi-stakeholder engagement in global environments and where you have different types of expertise and you need to facilitate that complexity, stretch your own thinking and kind of reflect on your own capabilities and strengths and weaknesses and kind of make sure that the team succeeds within the initiative. So definitely, I think a first experience in that, one of the first experiences in that type of way of working, which frankly to say, I see that is evolving in the industry all the time. I kind of see that all different carriers are more and more requiring this type of multidisciplinary collaboration and facilitation skills, and rather than deep expertise in one kind of single area. So yeah, broad answer, but definitely see that the different courses and different experiences were hugely beneficial for my career. And of course, all the networks and people that you meet here. Finland is rather a small country, so you come across with the people throughout your career and throughout your life in different contexts.
Yeah, I totally agree. I started IDBM in 97 and I still have that network left, which already started back then during the studies.
Wow.
Exactly.
Yes, so I'm in contact with some of the people I met then on a regular basis, and I have even gotten some job opportunities through the network. And it's really important to know people from different fields already in the beginning of your career.
Yeah, quite often when I joined Finnair, I found out that one of my bosses, she had been also doing IDBM, I think in the early 2000s. And she had not even like made the connection. And then when I said I'm from IDBM, she's like, oh, yeah, okay. So that was nice. And then later on, like when we had a couple of openings come up, I knew people in the program who would be like really good fits for it. So I'm always trying to sort of grow this sort of mini IDBM group at Finnair that way. And I think there's like 3 or 4 of us there now.
Okay, that's excellent.
Yep.
That's good news also for the current students, I guess. Be aware that they might be contacting you on a regular basis. Okay, maybe we could move on to the hot topics in design field. What do you think? What is now discussed at the moment in within the creative industry, within the design industry?
Well, if I kind of point out the elephant in the room, is I'd say that it's AI definitely. That's that's the number one hot topic right now, and not only in the design industry, but across all the industries and how it will transform basically everything, all the ways of working and how people behave and operate, etc. So definitely a huge question, and there's surely in the design field also discussion that will it actually or what kind of work will the AI automate and kind of cover, and what is the role of human and creative expertise in the future?
Do you have any ideas on this AI, Adi, or do you have also some other issues that you would like to put on the table?
Well, I do have lots of thoughts on AI, though I come into this more as a AI skeptic, in that I don't think it's going to make people lose jobs to the extent that they're scared. I think the best way forward for AI, as they are now with the whole agentic models and the large language models, is that there needs to be a human involved to both ensure that these things are being accurate, they have a tendency to sort of hallucinate, and to also be, to have that sort of human presence in the whole process. Like, I work in very much a customer-facing domain, and any sort of AI use that we can think of, it's always in support of the human activity rather than replacing human activity. So I think that's one thing to sort of keep reminding ourselves, because a lot of the conversation I keep seeing is AI wants to replace people and designers are maybe at risk. But I would also say that comes from another sort of hot topic, I would say, in the design space, which is that there is a need for designers to talk business more. And if you're able to talk business more and you're able to have these conversations with C-level executives, with key stakeholders, about what value you're bringing and what value design processes bring to the organization, then it's not as much of a risk that you're in that your work will be replaced by AI. So being able to sort of prove your value needs that business like vocabulary to communicate that. And so I would say those go almost hand in hand, that the rise of AI and the need for designers to sort of show their value by talking business have to go together.
I definitely agree what you said, and I see similarly that kind of more, maybe at this first wave of AI, more kind of manual tasks, such as, let's say, visualization task can be automated at some level with AI, but more kind of this understanding of human and human centricity and customer centricity, and turning that in the language of business and what it means for the organization, what it means for technology. I think we definitely that's a strategic question for organizations, and design-led approaches and capabilities are needed for facilitating that discussion and then bringing that empathy and human-centric thinking and capabilities and tools. That I think that's even more relevant than ever. So the question is not maybe that is AI replacing designers, but moreover, is it changing the role of designers? And do designers also need to let go a little bit of the traditional design identity and more maybe look a bit more strategically and a bit more broadly about the different areas and expertise and skills that they need to evolve and learn in order to be relevant in the organization? And as said before, I think this is not only a question for the designers even, but the same thing comes across with when developers, for example, are thinking about what's the future of coding or development. I think the same thing, that you can't really focus on manual tasks and being very focused on singular thing, very, very kind of individual dependent things, but you need to be, you need to evolve skills that kind of incorporate collaboration, facilitation, thinking about strategic questions, creating new innovations and being very creative and looking for the future opportunities. And definitely designers and design skills are needed for this type of development.
I agree, though I would say there's one caveat there, which is that part of why designers are feeling this sort of panic, and as you said, feeling like, oh, like our skills are being undervalued or not being given attention, is the place that we've been put into by the popularization of design thinking in the early 2000s, because it framed design as this creative activity. There's like craft involved, there's sticky notes involved, and you come up with ideas and you make something pretty. And that misunderstanding has sort of stuck through even outside of the design domain. So while within our domain, we understand there's so much more to design, because it was used as this easy to explain term as to what design is, that it gave almost false advertising for what we do. So now from the executive side, I feel that there may be people who are underinformed or misinformed that, okay, like I can ask ChatGPT for ideas, like what do I need designers to come ideate for? And that's why I think what you said earlier about facilitating becomes really important, because I think one of the things that designers need to embrace going forward is this ability to not just be creative, but to facilitate creativity around them. So they're sort of the people who enable creativity rather than just being the only creative ones. So that's a big part of where that value should come from.
Right, right. And kind of creativity itself, it's not the value or means to an end, yes, but moreover, what is the context and what is the purpose? What is the impact that you're aiming to create or co-create? And then you kind of provide that approach and tools for succeeding in that, or succeed, making your team to succeed in that goal of delivering something meaningful and something impactful. But yeah, agree. And design thinking was quite widely commercialized by IDEO at some point of their career, and it had at some ups and downs in the industry and how people nowadays perceive design as something that anyone can learn anyone can do quite easily, just putting the creative mindset on, switching the light bulb, and magically everything's possible. So yeah, there's a good question if there actually is a thing called design thinking.
Mm-hmm. I remember when design thinking was first launched that at least I felt that was not for the designers, that was mainly for non-designers, obviously. And it didn't feel relevant for me to be used as a tool. But do you think that now we can kind of let go of this term?
I would say it needs to go away, partly because from the perspective of being like a facilitator of impact and creativity in sort of service of that impact, design thinking gives people a very sort of rigid, narrow view into what that involves. And one of the most common things you would have heard over the years is, let's do double diamond, almost like that is the approach and that is the process, without recognizing that even within this very easily portrayed double diamond, there's like 1,000 different methods and approaches that could define each aspect of it. So one thing that I've been doing the last 3 years now is I work with the Helsinki Incubator programs and run like a workshop and a guest lecture on design approaches for startup entrepreneurs. And it's all about deconstructing design thinking and sort of getting rid of that term and focusing more on what it entails, like what is underlying as the foundation of that design process that then you can use as the way to facilitate their work and their goals in terms of what each of those entrepreneurs is trying to achieve. So I am definitely in favor of getting rid of the term.
What about you, Laura?
Well, I have to say that I'm maybe not that much of a terminology person, so kind of not like strictly against or in favor for any of the terms, but maybe my critique comes from that, exactly like you said, design thinking kind of proposes that the way to succeed in business and create impact is through a certain process, which is the double diamond. And rather, maybe I'm more interested, or where I see more value is putting the focus on how organizations operate. How do organizations work? And there's a lot of traditional structures. There's a lot of traditional cultural values that kind of, I think, are the root cause behind why organizations can't innovate or be creative, what is kind of putting them down, such as psychological safety. Like, do we have a space where people can freely kind of trust and be open and kind of flourish and be creative within each other? Or do we have kind of an engine or a system that actually slows that power down through culture such as kind of risk mitigation and psychological unsafetiness and siloed ways of working or benefit structures or models which are driving us to very short-term benefits. And I think now we're kind of living a time where we really, our organizations should really look more over to the long-term goals and long-term benefits alongside of the short-term optimization. Otherwise, it's very difficult to be relevant in today's market and in long-term. So in order to kind of transform your organization and perform in your organization and be the market winner, I think you really need to put focus and emphasis that do we have the cultural values, the right motivated people, the right skills and capabilities and governance structures in the organizations that are kind of really supporting us to succeed in those goals. Mm. And in this context and kind of long story short, I think it's a bit less irrelevant if we are talking about design thinking, yes or no, because these are, I think, are the underlying causes limiting us.
We have here at Aalto research program on creativity, and there was this Creative Leap project, which now ended. And one of the things what they were researching there was the organizational creativity and then also personal creativity within the organization. And in order for companies to succeed and get a better revenue, you need both. So personal creativity is not enough. You also need to be creative on an organizational level. And I think that the results were quite promising, because for companies, it's important that they understand that what is the value of then supporting the creativity in the organizational level as well.
Exactly. And then if we think about change and kind of how do you lead a change towards creativity, for example, it starts from an individual. The individual influences to the team, the team influences to the organization. So they are all interconnected. But I think one of the kind of what I've seen throughout my career, the first step to kind of change the culture and change the ways of working in the organization, it starts from the top management. So is the top management team and the individuals there ready to kind of reflect, for example, their own creativity or their own ways of working or their own values? And that has a direct effect to the whole organization and how well it is able to operate.
And if I can build on that, it's also very crucial right now when the global economy feels a bit shaky and fuel prices are going up and there's always like AI compute needs more resources. So with all these sort of factors, there's a trend where more and more leadership is starting to sort of get more conservative, I would say, where they're more looking at mitigating risk rather than looking at opportunity. And maybe that requires a slight sort of rethink that, okay, like, yes, we need to lower our risk. Yes, we need to make sure that we don't take a hit from all these sort of outside factors. But then there's also opportunity there to innovate And it really matters what leadership incentivizes inside of all of this. And if they're incentivizing survival rather than sort of exploration, then you can feel a bit stifled. And it also like filters down, as you said, like it goes very top down that, okay, leadership is looking to survive and like all our initiatives are about the here and now. But to be creative, whether it's at an organization or at an individual level, you need that freedom to explore. And that, I think, is something that more leadership can encourage or should encourage.
And if I continue from there, I think this can be directly measured, for example, from the amount of time that the leadership team uses for, I like to use these terms, performance and transformation. So how much focus do you use on observing your past performance and optimizing that, rather than do you use from your 60-minute meeting how much time to discussing about the transformation and innovations and future opportunities? So that has a direct effect on the whole organization's performance.
How do you calculate that?
Well, for example, it can be just as simple that the amount of time the leadership team spends together. Let's say they have a 60-minute meeting once a week. So how much of that time is used for the performance discussion and how much time it's used for the transformation discussion? And maybe more traditionally, most of the times the 60 minutes is used for the performance. Yeah. And now I think there's a shift that more and more time is spent and reserved, and it's acknowledged that, okay, we need this more long-term thinking and futures thinking and scenarios and creativity in order to survive and thrive in the future.
Mm. How do you then foster creativity?
First of all, I have to say that I think for maybe many listeners, creativity can be a bit imitating word, that is it something artistic and mm-hmm. I'm not creative. But I'd claim that all of us are, and it can be, for example, creative problem solving. So many, for example, technical people might consider that they are not creative that much. But if you observe a work of an architect or a developer or any of the possible roles, that's the essence, like more like even like mathematical problem solving mm-hmm. that you need to do every day. And maybe it's more of a mindset shift if you focus on that problem solving, on the opportunities and different directions you could take, rather than limiting what's not possible and how it's difficult to solve an issue.
Yeah, I fully agree. And I see that all the time because I work both with sort of developers and business stakeholders who have spent many years in the aviation domain. So they know about like how every sort of technical detail works. But then they're always thinking, oh, but then it can't do this, it can't do that. Like, we know that it hasn't worked this way. And so much of my work involves sort of facilitating sessions with them on how can we push the it can't happen? How can we change the we've done it this way, or it has always worked this way, so it'll continue working this way? And at least with the developers, it's a bit easier because the designers work very closely with them. And if there are limitations, then we actually get to work with them and get to understand from them, okay, what are the ways we can work around this? What are the ways we can creatively like overcome this limitation? And the developers have also seemed to enjoy it so far. So at least that's been good. And from the stakeholder side, what you said about the long-term thinking like really plays a part. So we have like this one group which handles sort of the end-to-end customer journey and both like what happens on good days and what happens on bad days. And one of the things that I was working with them recently on was, okay, here's the roadmap that you have for, say, the next 6 months. Do you know what you have to do after that? Do you know what you're going to do after that? And the answer was sort of like it's in all of our heads, but we don't have it like down. So once we sat down together and we did like this futures-based workshop where we used the Three Horizons model, and basically said, okay, here's like the future that you want to get to. And for all of them, it was like really sort of fun because they hadn't had the opportunity to really think, what is their ideal dream state? It was always like, what can we do and what can we sort of incrementally improve? But never really, if we had like no limitations, like where would we like to go? And once they had that, they were like, okay, so then if we change like these two, three things in the now, we can actually get towards that. So giving them sort of that inspiration helps a lot in this process.
Exactly. If I continue from there, I think many designers have this kind of quite strong kind of inner drive to create something purposeful or something meaningful, like value for the customers or value for the environment or something like that. And maybe many of the roles traditionally don't have that visibility of why we are actually developing this single thing in the customer journey and how does it connect with the bigger picture. So I think that's one asset that designers can help to see and understand by engaging people early on from the process to kind of give this common purpose and meaningfulness for the for the works that they're doing. But you asked about the creativity.
Yes.
We were going around it. So I think the question was that how do you foster the creativity? So I'd come back to the, like, if we look in the organizational perspective, I'd come back to the organizational culture once again. So I think creativity requires, for example, an environment that is kind of safe. There's a psychological safety for failing, for exploring different kind of ideas. So I think that's the very first starting point. If that doesn't exist, it's very hard to change the organization to be creative. And I think then there's the individual lens that what kind of turns on your creative mindset. And well, for example, for me, it's sometimes getting bored or you know, doing experiences that are enjoyable. Kind of exploring different kind of opportunities and getting meeting with people, those can be good enforcements for the creativity.
Mm. Yeah, I think from the organization perspective, I agree on the culture. The one thing I would say can be sort of used to catalyze the change in that culture is to almost remind people that they have the permission to be creative even within the limitations of what they can do. And that, I think, is very easily forgotten because you're doing the day-to-day work, you're doing the things that you've always done. So it's easy to forget that you can think of other ways of doing the same thing. You can go outside of what is known and what is like understood to see, okay, like, is there something new? Is there a new technology out there that we can adopt? Is AI going to maybe help transform some aspect of this? Those kind of like open-ended questions only come when you yourself feel that, yes, I have the space to be creative. And I think that can be both top-down, where the leadership says, please do be creative, but it can also be from the individual, like sort of spreading through the organization, where each one can realize that they have some amount of room to be creative, even within whatever limitations they already have.
In one of the researchers in this Creative Leap was saying that creativity often happens in the liminal space and time, so it's somewhere in between. Mm-hmm. And it might not even be given as a kind of a time and space for being creative, but it is a perfect place for it. So, for example, ad hoc coffee breaks or something that is not a little bit out of normal. And then that could be then the true point where you can be creative.
I also think what I've observed throughout my career is that maybe non-designers tend to get very uncomfortable in the early stages of the process that designers often refer as fuzzy front end. So the fuzzy space is difficult. as we don't know yet the answers, as we don't know what the end solution will be. And I'd say that it often connects with the feeling of losing control. And I think organizations are quite built on the feeling of control, that everything should be followed by the process and on control, and the risks are managed. So I think that's also a little bit point of reflection, that how do we embrace this fuzziness as we are living very fuzzy era right now in the market. We don't know what AI will, what's the end result of the AI transformation for the society as a total.
Just to build on that, that actually reminds me of one of the key ways of reframing that fuzziness in your head, which I think designers can really sort of help facilitate in the people around them, which is that the fuzziness and ambiguity can be a bit overwhelming because you don't know what is the right direction. It's not like this is good, this is bad, but it's rather this is good in some ways, bad in some ways, this is good in other ways, bad in other ways. So there's no like clear sort of choice. And it ties back to two things which people should recognize. I think this also applies like to life in general, but I think even in organizations, which is that decisions which have this kind of fuzziness are opportunities to shape those directions based on what is important to you or what you would like to go towards. And that is based on the values that you said, that if you know what your values are and you have like a clear sort of company principles, or this is what the company would work according to, then in that fuzzy space, you can start recognizing which pathways are opportunities to really sort of embody those values. And you can also recognize which pathways can help sort of enhance those values. And that helps sort of reframe this ambiguity as more like an opportunity to sort of live by those values.
Sorry, I said values
too many times.
No worries. Values are important.
That was an excellent point. And I think like people tend to get scared if their decisions are wrong or right, but you can always come back that they were right at the time when reflecting my values and my choices that I had in my hand and the knowledge I had in my hand. At that point, they were right.
Exactly.
So I think that's also a bit comforting, maybe, message or topic to focus on.
This one of the researchers also said about true creativity that it requires both originality and effectiveness. But I don't know if that's really a good way to describe creativity. Do you have any thoughts on this, like originality and effectiveness?
I think effectiveness matters a lot, especially in the sort of working industry, like in corporate world, because any creativity that is in service of a specific impact that you're aiming for, that is relevant to the context you're in, that is what determines the effectiveness. So that's always going to be a factor. Originality, I would say, is a trap that designers get into, especially like starting designers. It's, and this is maybe more me, but when I started off as a designer, one of the things for me was, okay, like I have this great idea, and then I'd find out that someone had already tried something like it, and I'd feel disheartened. But the reality is that, sure, you came up with an idea that someone else had, or there's an idea out there that seems to fit this context. There's nothing wrong with that, because if an idea is, serves that effectiveness and like delivers to that context and delivers the impact needed, then it doesn't matter how original it is. It is original to solve that problem that you're taking on. So I think originality might be a bit overemphasized from a designer perspective, but the effectiveness is essential.
Yeah, and maybe that is then underemphasized many times.
Exactly. Couldn't agree more. I think originality goes hand in hand with creativity, but it can kind of entail, for example, how original is your approach on solving an issue, rather than was the outcome original or not. So I think there's more means and complexity to the question how original the process or outcome should be in order of being creative and valuable. But effectiveness, definitely, I think we all should be obsessed about the impact and obsessed about the effectiveness. And that's, I think, the number one question you should kind of come back to when doing, you know, any of the work in nowadays environment.
Yes.
And if I can just add to that, from the impact perspective, it's not just about impact in terms of what you're doing or the problem you're trying to solve. It also needs to consider the sort of broader impact outside of that. So for example, if you're coming up with something and it works for the problem you're solving, but then later on it leads to, say, some form of inequality or some form of exploitation or some form of environmental degradation, then you need to be aware of that. I think as designers, we have like a responsibility as well that when we say it's effective, we also need to consider the consequences of those effective solutions we come up with.
Now, let's move along with the other track that I wanted to discuss about service design. Do you identify yourselves as service designers nowadays?
Well, I can start. The short answer would be no.
No.
Yes. Yes. I consider kind of myself something like a business strategist or business developer, but I definitely see that in my kind of core or in my backbone, there are service design capabilities and approaches of seeing things and what we discussed here, human centricity, customer centricity, empathy, creative problem solving, very visual way of thinking and concretizing abstract things, embracing the fuzziness. I think all of those are very much in the backbone of who I am and what kind of practice I do nowadays. But from a title perspective, I'd say that there are now kind of broader capabilities and skills that kind of I present rather than purely focusing on being a service designer.
Yeah, I think it's a bit similar for me in that my role is broader because part of it involves working with stakeholders almost like a in-house consultancy that we're helping them deliver sort of their needs and their goals. But at the same time, if I look at sort of the core job that I do, I am responsible for the end-to-end customer journey being good. So in that sense, service design is literally what I do. And we actually have like journey maps that we build, service blueprints that we set up. So in my case, I would say that's the foundation of everything. And then on top of that, there's like the additional things that I do.
I feel that then we as educators need to give some kind of identity for the students here. And in the IDBM program, maybe that's a bit more ambiguous, I would say. As what is the identity. Do you see that there's a future for the IDBM program, and is IDBM still relevant in today's working life?
I started this discussion by, we were talking about the what was the purpose and role of IDBM in my own career, and I referred that most of my work is like IDBM industry project and more multidisciplinary. So very kind of practically speaking, yes, definitely. I think kind of the skills and the mindsets and the approaches that IDBM promotes are maybe even more relevant than ever. So definitely there's a need for this type of multidisciplinary capabilities. But as we discussed here, I think kind of the role of what are our ways of working and kind of through the change of AI, rethinking also the position, the purpose of kind of human work rather than what is automated and what are kind of the structures and processes that we utilize for working. I think IDBM also needs to encourage people to innovate that and rethink that in novel ways.
Yeah, I fully agree that IDBM 100% has relevance now and going forward. And to build on what you said about the AI aspect, I had a chat with the current IDBM program director, Ville, a few months back. And we were talking about how IDBM is actually integrating AI into the ways of working of students already. So the fact that the program is continuing to evolve and continuing to have its finger on the pulse of what is the domain and what is the world like is going to also be an asset going forward. So it's not just about the multidisciplinarity, but the fact that the program continues to sort of refresh and update itself to stay relevant to the trends in the world, that also contributes. And one more point I would say is, in the working domain, you are going to encounter not just multidisciplinarity, but multicultural environments. And IDBM being like sometimes 50, 60% international also plays a huge part, because it gives you that chance to sort of experience a multicultural environment, work together with people with different cultural backgrounds, different cultural ways of working and values. And that is something you will encounter in the working world as well. And it prepares you really well for that.
We're wrapping up. Do you have any kind of a short tip for listeners on how to enhance creativity in the organization?
Well, the change starts within you. So leading by example, I'd say. And in order to do that, I think it requires a little bit jumping to the comfort zone, kind of being very present, being quite balanced in who you are and where you are and why you're doing this. So starting from your personal individual journey and then leading by example, that would be my tip to consider and start from.
And my tip actually builds on that, because I think you have to lead by example. You have to show like what are the values design is bringing to an environment. But at the same time, I think you need a sense of humility that you're not the only creative one. So my tip would be to both be humble and be someone who sees the possibility to facilitate creativity in everyone around you. It could be the Scrum Master. It could be the developer. It could be the stakeholder, it could be the product owner, it could be an executive. But there are opportunities to sort of facilitate and foster creativity in others that you are really well equipped for. So don't be afraid to do that.
And celebrate the successes. Yes. I think we as Finns are sometimes not the greatest as kind of promoting each other and kind of saying out loud what people, when they're being creative or successful or being in their uncomfort zone, but winning their fears. So I think that needs to be also acknowledged, that you kind of raise up others and promote them when that's earned.
Agreed.
That's a nice ending. Thank you very much, Laura. Thank you, Adi.
Thank you, Irina. For having us.
Thank you for listening. I am your host, Irina Viippola. This episode was edited by me and Aditya Parek and produced by the IDBM program at Aalto University. Okay, good. All the recording is fine?
Yep.
Should we?
Thank you both for this.
Yes, thanks.
Yeah, this was really good.